Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Just Another Kill Team Podcast, connecting Kill Team communities across the globe. Your hosts today are me, I'm Jason.
And I'm Travis, regular co-host.
We connect with all sorts of different people, TOs, competitive players, and just anyone else that has something interesting to say that they message us and convince us to talk about on an episode.
Yeah, we do like making the world a little bit smaller, one hobbyist at a time.
We do have a Discord and a Patreon, which is definitely some stuff that you should check out if you enjoy our content.
And if you do enjoy this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends who play Kill Team, because the more, the merrier.
Do you love our content and want to see us expand? Support us on Patreon. We're just getting our start with producing video content as well, and we can put more time and supplies into this endeavor with your support. Additionally, we are putting out a bonus episode every week where we review tournament stats. It is available on our Patreon to subscribers only. Hope to see you there. In today's episode, we interview a good friend of mine, Lee, local to the same scene as me, and we chat about organizing narrative events as well as Inquisition.
We've got a lot to talk about, considering that narrative is one of the, I don't know if it's the most popular way to play, because there's no way for us to ever know, really.
Yeah, it's hard, I feel like, to like really get into narrative with, because it's like someone has to run it, and like that can sometimes feel like a chore, especially if you're doing like a long-term narrative game, which I haven't done. I know Will did it, and it's just like trying to do what you're doing, and then people constantly coming back to you. It's a lot.
We've definitely tried running a narrative campaign in New York, and we've done all the way from this like grand scale Wednesday night, all the generals met up and they would pick where their soldiers were going to go. And then each of those soldiers fought either a Kill Team game or 40K game. And that was insane. And I did it for like 6 months, I think. And I slowly went crazy because there was like meta rules and like lining things up and lining up the number of factions. And I went crazy. And then the next 40K campaign was like much easier to keep track of. And then we did something similar again for Kill Team. And that also drove me insane and drove the guy who wrote the story kind of crazy. So now the current campaign in New York is just tracking the monthly score with an apocalypse game every 3 months, because the apocalypse is like the reward for toughing it out.
Yeah, I've never done an apocalypse game, and I was like, God, it looks like so much fun.
I think it's funny because it's like, it is cool, but it's cool and also terrible because you are trapped for like 10 hours and it looks great because there's a lot of stuff, but it just takes forever for anything to resolve.
There was that, like, so I mean, like with the apocalypse stuff that you did you do like that apocalypse system that had like D12s and like armor saves in a different phase and all that? Or was it just like a 3,000 plus point game?
No, they are 12.5k point games.
Per player or the whole thing?
No, for the whole thing. So like generally players are, I think the largest one we've had was a 30,000 point game with three factions at 10,000 points each. And like, we're basically just playing 9th or 10th with fast rolling, and also everything dies at the end of a phase. So like if you get shot, you still get to shoot back before you go away. And it is really crazy, and it is kind of fun, but you know, like lining up and seeing six Bane Blades, that's a spectacle that doesn't really go away.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah, I can pull up a couple photos and drop them in our group chat so that just we can spitball. But like, I think one of the other cool things that we've done is that we've mixed the Kill Team and the 40K narrative. So I think the last one we ran, there was a small central fortress that the Kill Teams were infiltrating into. And then they left kind of like Saving Private Ryan. So they during the course of the 40K game, so this is how long the 40K apocalypse game takes. They started playing round one. Every phase, the Kill Team players were allowed to move 6 inches. They made it in the course of turn one. They made it out in the course of, I think, the beginning of turn three for the 40K game. And that was like an 8-player Kill Team game inside of a fortress with like a group of assassins defending this mushroom. So it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun story. I could definitely get like some players who like to play 40K more into the Kill Team scene, and see, maybe people who want to play, that are playing Kill Team, want to play some 40K. Definitely.
Yeah, it's kind of like a fun way to like show off both sides, but it gets really, really chaotic. And the pictures are always kind of cool, but they also are just like a crazy amount of visual noise because you cannot tell what is happening.
I feel like the rules layering can sometimes be funky, like from 40K to Kill Team, if you're trying to mesh them a little bit.
Yeah, so for example, it's just like stuff
oh man
everywhere. But yeah. I think in one of our campaigns, we had a guy. So the overarching, you guys haven't had a chance to do like these crazy overarching stories, but at least in Brooklyn, one of the overarching stories is like, we started with a Space Hulk. It crashed into a planet. It split the planet into like, it split the crust of the planet, awakened some Necron technology. And that was the grand strategy game that we did for a while. And yeah, it gets real crazy. And Apocalypse is always a hoot, but it definitely makes no sense.
I feel like it's a system that's made not to really make a lot of sense. It's just there for fun. They're like, somebody's gonna want to do this, so we might as well lay the ground rules.
Yeah, I mean, luckily in Kill Team, the game is much closer to kind of like a narrative experience, kind of out of the box, right?
Yeah, well, it definitely feels like that to me. I mean, it's just like when you're playing 40K, like narrative, it's just like you feel like a general, you know, kind of navigating a whole army, and so like I feel like you kind of miss the fun stuff that's like happens in stories. You're telling the story of a battle. I feel like you're playing Kill Team. Like, you could literally just be playing a storyline of a single operative fighting for his life, you know, or with his team trying to survive. And that's the part I love the most.
And how do you try to help set those moments up as like a narrative game master? You know, I've gone all the way from trying a unique background that kind of added extra rules to the game. We've done like the full narrative rules for a couple months, which meant that Space Marines, I think in general, just kind of way overperform because each Space Marine gets 3 to 5 experience every game, and they just quickly overrun everyone else because your Captain Space Marine now has a 2-up save, hits on 2s, ceaseless, and all these other crazy things. And your veteran guys,
I've killed one guy, Sergeant.
I know. We did a narrative with Will one time, and I had a Reaver Sergeant that could charge from conceal and had a suppressed pistol, and it was just like, oh, so he's just on conceal all the time and is just literally kill anybody.
Was that the narrative league that was going on for a while?
Yeah, that was the narrative league that he tried to do for a while. It was super fun. But yeah, that's one of the things that's like trying to keep track of all this stuff, especially if you don't know narrative very well. Like, trying to forego it by yourself is like, can be very daunting and just like not, it can really scare a lot of people away. I always kind of like focus on just like the story of like, hey, this is like the story of what's going on. I always like to have just random events instead of like, you know, the equipment and stuff. Like, we did the Into the Dart for a Renegade, and then we were just going into the, that was all phasing out, and we were kind of going into Beta Decima. I think this is even before Beta Decima was even revealed, maybe.
Yeah, it was.
And so we were kind of like, I was like, well, clearly we're phasing out of this. It's going to go into, you know, maybe jungle. Everyone was speculating. I was like, let's like have the ship crashing. Like, what? Or let's like this, like, you know, Into the Dark, that whole area is just, it's falling apart. People are going crazy. Everyone's trying to escape. Clearly, that's kind of the story I feel like they were leaning towards with the 4 Into the Dark sets anyways. So I was like, oh, let's just like, I play a lot of Magic. And so I was like, D20s are like, you're always rolling D20s, it seems like. It's like, that's how you kind of determine how things happen a lot. And I was like, why don't you just like at the end of a turn, you just roll a D20 and random stuff happens? And I actually spitballed that idea to Jason once. And Jason was like, I really like that. You should build something off of that. So
playtested it for like a couple months and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I just started writing, and I just kept going and kept going because it was just coming to me and coming to me. I think I did the whole base, which was pretty much like 2 pages of rules and stuff. And like, I came up with it in just a night. And then I brought it to Jason, and we playtested it a bunch and had some other people come in and playtest it. And I kind of took what they thought. And sometimes they're like, yeah, this is like really oppressive. Can we like not do that? And like, let's try to like hurt. Like, one of them was like, oh, everyone just has like a -1 APL if this happens. And then it's like, okay, start of the turn, like you're in Into the Dark and you're playing a vet guard team or something, or a guard team, and you're just, all your guys are -1 APL right off the bat. It's so just like oh gosh, so like, you just instead can't of
like
anything.
A full narrative thing like Spec Ops with like level ups and stuff like that, it was like it's like the mission itself was the narrative stuff. And I posted a couple of pictures in our group chat as well. With the crazy lighting,
the bright red, like kind of setting the mood. I think this is something that the GW events do. So at the World Championships, they have like the desert room where all the lights are bright. They have sand on the tables. They have the ice room where the AC is turned down. So in the picture that Lee and Jason are talking about, there is a room that's all lit in red. So as you are in the dark, Space Hulk is going down, the lights are blaring. And that's, I think that's a nice visual image to kind of help get people in the mood.
Yeah,
you know, my example of something like this was when we dropped our players into the warp in the first New York Open. I had like a space mat that all of our boards were on, and they went to lunch. I removed all the boards and then just tossed a mishmash of terrain into the warp, and they were forced to make a lot of jump tests.
Love that.
That sounds like fun. So, but yeah, so like the, just like, I think taking people's interest and just trying to make something that's like going to be pretty balanced and pretty fun. And then like, they're just finding stuff that helps them. Throughout that endeavor, I think it just makes it something that's simple. Cause like, you don't want to go too complicated either. Like I found out that like trying to do too many things at once or trying to remember all of these effects, it ends up being missed a lot. And I feel like it loses a lot of its sparkle. People are like, oh, I missed that. Or I missed this, you know?
Yeah.
Keep something simple, just so it's like, because you pretty much roll the die, something happens. There's a couple of things where it's like, oh, you're in the dark, so you have like a, you know, a lot harder to see, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, so like some of the examples, so like in, like the Into the Dark narrative, for example, we had the initiative roll to decide who gets the initiative for the turn was on a d20, and that was linked to a random effect. So like if I roll like an 18 and you roll a 2, I've got the initiative, but then the 2 was like distant explosions, nothing happens, and the 18 was like airlock bursts or something like that, and it was just like all the doors in a random room
would just blow up.
Yeah, so like there's all sorts of crazy stuff that could happen. So there was like a gravity slam that would send everyone into one of the walls. There was like all the doors in a certain room close and everyone inside acts like they're injured for the turn. And then there was like the lights go out and everything past like 4 inches is not visible, all sorts of crazy stuff like that. So like these narrative events was just like fun rules, and it didn't add a whole lot of crunchy bits. It was like Lee was saying earlier, like keep it simple. And it was just like a half a page of extra text that adds fluff and kind of like adds to the narrative element. And like the events that you've been doing have been pretty successful. And Will's been doing narrative events as well. And that was kind of like Travis was talking earlier with there was like team captains. So there's like a Chaos team and like an Imperium team, and like Xenos would kind of be thrown in there, however. And then like the team captain would like assign people to different maps, so you could kind of like wager for your matchups and things like that. So there was like 10 players in 6 maps, so there was like a leftover one. So mm-hmm. We've done all sorts of stuff like that. And how's it? So like, I know that you and Will are working on another narrative event coming up in Minnesota in May. Do you have enough sketched out that you've got something to talk about there, or
not quite yet? We went hard this last Saturday. I was a little under the weather, but we're just kind of coming out of it. I can pull it up here, but like I said, I go over it. So the general idea is that there's two different teams of Inquisitors, and they're like, and there's this rising Tyranid problem that desperately needs to be dealt with. And one team's like, we need to just eradicate these guys. We need to really just team up, hammer down, and just kill them. And the other team's like, wait, these guys could potentially be, you know, a great asset to us. Let's try to like control them, you know, which is like obviously not, you know, doesn't make the Emperor smile by any means, you know. So
some people call it heresy.
Exactly.
That sounds like a Padlin, if I've ever heard a 40K meme.
So they're going kind of back and forth, you know, doing this. And so we also wanted to do something where I wanted to incorporate some stuff from like Darktide with like stims and stuff. I thought that would be kind of fun, where you guys can take stims into battle and you can basically choose a single operative and they can basically get a small buff for the turning point. Anything from like getting additional attacks to like increasing their ballistic or weapon skills, or like healing up like into their movement, or like some more like even maybe giving them an extra APL. Obviously, we got to play test this and see what's going to be good or what's going to be too overpowered. I thought it'd be fun to even like make them so they stack, so you could really like take his bunch. Like you only take a limited number of drugs, but you take them all and you could literally just dump them onto one guy and just make him a powerhouse for a turn or something.
Okay, here's an idea. You can give someone multiple drugs, but then there's like a hazard to it.
Oh, I thought about that too. I thought that would be very, very fun.
It's very like Witcher potion vibes.
Mm-hmm. And for anyone who's listening who has like fun ideas or things that they've done that have worked well, make sure to drop them in our Discord, because I think we've got a fair number of narrative people who are focused on narrative stuff in our Discord anyways. You know, the New York Open has a narrative every year. We've had on, you know, Once Upon a Kill Team, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
And they've got some fun stuff. We've also had Battle Brothers Ben, who has done a narrative campaign with a bunch of Poxwalkers. So there's been a lot of different ideas. If you've got some cool ideas that have been fun, or you're looking for a little bit of help on, you know, moving your narrative campaign along, our Discord is a good spot.
Yeah. I think it'd be fun if you had an event. I would think we even like exchange paperwork, you know. here's one for my narrative, I'll take yours and run it here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, little narrative mission swap on the Discord. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will say that like the last year's New York Open, we definitely did not use that many of the narrative rules, and we really just focus on hammering the narrative home. And I think that went over very well, because we gave everybody everybody a little bit of like AI prompting to kind of help give you a setup for your team, which was nice. Mm-hmm. So it was like a robot that would help you basically kind of like spitball why your team is on the planet or what your motivations were. Mm-hmm. That was really nice. And a nice way to kind of get everybody in the mood.
Yeah. One of the things that I liked about like some of these one-day tournaments, especially Will's, is that he still incorporates like rare equipment into his. And so sometimes you just get the wackiest stuff. Like I had a Armighty's leader that had a fusion pistol from the Eldar, and he just went around just one-shotting everybody. It was phenomenal.
That sounded pretty fun.
Yeah, I had like in that same campaign, I had a Banshee warrior with like a sniper rifle or something crazy like that. So I was like, oh, I've got my shooting threat. Yeah, so that was all actually part of a mechanism where there was extra objective markers on the board. I think it might have been like a light cover, like crate thing, and you could run up to it and do a 1 AP action to loot it, and then you could flag down Will, and he'd run over with a deck of cards, and you'd draw one, or he'd give you a token, and then you could spend that at the end of the between rounds to pull cards from the deck, and that could be like something like some of those would be like the grand prize where you get the store credit for the event, and some of them were like you get rare equipment, and some of them were like you get extra like tokens for the mini game like wager on your battles thing. It sounds more complicated than it was. It was pretty straightforward. But yeah, so like the narrative stuff, we've had a lot of homebrew stuff in our narrative.
Yeah, narrative is the home of the homebrews. Do you feel like there was anything that you remember being very standout that players talked about a lot afterwards?
I think especially at Will's, they really liked just the teamwork. So it's like you were two teams, you know, focusing on each other. So like there was a lot less feel bad, like if you like lost all three of your rounds, because like you felt like you were still contributing to the team. Mm-hmm. Which I know a lot of people like. With the Into the Dark one, I think people literally liked the whole like all the lights obviously and really set the mood and the theme, but it's just like having something that's balanced, that's like can kind of just catch you off guard, like this kind of the surprise events like of it was fun. It's like sometimes like you'd be setting up and then all of a sudden you're like going in there and you'd like get thrown completely different side of the ship, and then there's even times where someone was like literally like, oh hey, we need to like rush in and get this point, and the next turning point that point blew up and killed like, you know, four operatives, and you're like, oh well, that didn't go as planned, you know. Just
yeah, and like for that event I even put together a playlist, and like, you know, I started off with the Doom soundtrack, and then I like chopped up the stuff that was like a little too calm, or like arranged it in a way, and then I like specifically made like a 4-hour playlist that ramped up intensity over the duration of 4 hours, and then like by the end it was like time's up, and then it went back to like calm, kind of like but still like Doom vibe music, but like a little more calm. And I like the guy that was running the whole convention, Jamie, he told me later, he's like, every now and then I see an event at the convention that I'm like, damn, I wish I was like playing in that and not running it, and that was one of them, with like the soundtrack and the lights, and like he loves Kill Team, and yeah
that's gotta feel good when you get like the feedback like that. Mm-hmm. And I think narrative, I think that is the same vibe that I got from a lot of people at this year's New York Open, is like, oh, that looked really fun, because we had like these big forest trees and then a trench board, and we had a subway, which, you know, they all had like slightly different things going on, and just like visually it looked nice, which does help. And I think this year we're gonna have potentially a war, or like a dead titan as one of our narrative boards.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, that sounds pretty epic.
That reminds me, I don't know if you guys have seen it, there was a guy who did the, I can't remember, there was a giant Tau ship and he had a Kill Team, and he had Glass Half Dead on it.
Yeah, that was on Play On.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, I wish the gameplay was a little bit cleaner on that episode. I think
there was definitely a couple of misplays.
I don't know if this is how the game is supposed to be played, but it was a very cool game because it was on top of a Manta, definitely GW's literal most expensive model.
Yeah, you don't get to do that every day.
Yeah, so like, are you building some of your own set pieces, Lee, or is there someone in your community that helps you build up the narrative displays, basically?
In this place, you're kind of like talking the events, or just like the like terrain sort of stuff?
Yeah, kind of like terrain, because like in my area we have Grot Guard. He has like an all Grot army, but he like enjoys building boards, so he has a trench board that he brought over from wherever he moved from, and then he also helped us build the forest boards, and now he's helping us build the Titan boards. So
yeah,
we've got a guy who's like really into terrain. Yeah. And we have a really good painter in our area. So do you have anyone like that helps to support kind of the narrative efforts?
Right now, we don't really have anybody that does a lot of terrain. We do have I just bought myself a 3D printer here recently. I know another guy did. And so we've been kind of talking, and there's a couple of us that already had it before that talking about getting these, are using the 3D printers to 3D print terrain that we could use for narrative events or another events. And especially with this one coming up, Will is very good and is utilizing the resources that he has available to him to find these STLs of really cool terrain. Like what he's got, I guess he has one for like a Tyranid infested, like Into the Dark stuff that we're looking at into printing some of that and labs. And he has like a Tyranid infested, like Eldar ruins. Like, so we're going to use stuff like that. Like I said, he's the first person that comes to mind when talking about that.
No, I think that's exactly kind of what I'm thinking about. Like anyone, you know, for any listeners who are interested in doing stuff like this, talk to your community members, especially if you kind of help TO and you're interested, like finding the people who are interested in 3D printing, you know, because I feel like most of the pretty established Warhammer communities probably have at least one person in the area that's really into 3D printing. So like connecting with that person and trying to find out what you can figure out together is definitely a big part of it. Like if you go over to Eons of Battle, they always have new terrain. You know, being a Patreon for 1 month for some cool terrain, if you've got a friend with the printer, definitely can give you a narrative board that most of your players would never see otherwise, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like if anybody's on the fence about getting a 3D printer, like 100% recommend it. Like I think I spent like $200 or $300 on mine. And like I said, and I've pretty much been running nonstop since, and it's been really very, very easy. I had zero experience coming into it, and it's very easy.
You're using a FDM printer?
Yep.
Yeah, I do get the sense that the space has gotten much easier to get into, because I know when I started it in 2016-17, it was a little bit less accessible, and like the printers required a lot more fiddling. I think a lot of the newer printers definitely come out of the box way more ready to go, and like resin printing is much, much better than it was, you know, even like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, I haven't quite stepped my foot into that. Jason's been pushing me, but I don't have the space for that, unfortunately, at the moment.
Yeah, because you want to like vent that out and stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of extra stuff that you got to carry around.
All right, going to jump in real quick with a quick shout out to our sponsor, War Games Atlantic. War Games Atlantic makes sick miniatures for great prices. Each kit includes enough parts for 24 models with loads of special weapons. It's great for your Astra Militarum factions, Traitor Guard factions, Kassarkin, stuff like that. And it's also awesome for any other miniatures agnostics games that you might play, such as The End. Message me on Discord if you want to learn more about The End. Check the show notes for a link. Anything that you buy through that link will support the podcast as well. All right, back to the podcast.
So what kind of teams have you been really into, Lee? You know, we've been talking about narrative. Are you mostly playing narrative, or are you also dabbling your feet in the competitive side?
Ooh, I've been doing a lot more into the competitive side lately. I actually really want to try and do some of these bigger events. Jason had that kill team Adepticon practice, and Blaine and some Six-Sided Legion showed up, and I was really hoping to get a game against him, but fortunately I did not. But yeah, lately I've been playing a lot of Inquisition lately. I was playing Arbites before them, but they kind of been feeling bad. And so I picked up Inquisition because I was like, I already have this team. I can still use them with this team. And yeah, I've been having a lot of success locally with Inquisition. I'm still not playing them to their fullest, but it's kind of crazy to think to look back at the games and be like, wow, I probably pretty easily could have won that if I would have just remembered this or did this. And sometimes you just dice. There was a game I was playing with a guy here, and he was playing Harlequins, and he literally denied me like 5 victory points just because I couldn't kill 2 guys. And then he couldn't even just stop me from doing it. If I would have just killed, I would have gotten 5 victory points and just won. but I just rolled bad, and sometimes that's just how the game goes.
I think Inquisition specifically is also one of those teams, because the team looks very good on paper. It's got lots of operative choices. It's got strong operatives too, but the majority of your fighters and your shooters are going to be hitting on 4s, which means that even with all the rerolls in the world, there's going to be a handful of times where your quest keeper just, you know, rolls a bunch of 2s twice. Or your veteran guard, your breacher goes up with a Melta or a plasma, and you just roll the one hit, and then you reroll one dice, and your opponent saves one. You're like, all right, cool. I've lost what I needed. I lost what would have been a guaranteed kill on a quarry that could have shifted over to something else and pressured something else, and now you're trapped.
Nothing feels worse than that when you're going for that quarry operative, and you're like, oh, this is going to be an easy kill, and then you just can't kill them, and then your one piece that you were using, they have a lot of, I'd say they have a lot of good threat, but then once you like, their threats are all pretty squishy, so it's like you kill them, and then you're like, that's losing key pieces very well.
Yeah, there's not a ton of redundancy on the team. You know, last week we had Jay the Sloth on, and he talked about how he uses Kasserkin and Breachers. Are you using similar secondary operatives?
Yeah, I've actually been using Novice Breachers pretty much all the time now. I did start with the team with Kasserkin, and I've used Arbites once. But yeah, the Kasserkin are really good. I wasn't too happy with their shooting. Having only five operatives, and you're taking a comms and, you know, a medic, and then you're, like you said, I've been taking the plasma gun because the plasma cannon is really slow, and a lot of teams are just can out navigate it. They just walk around it and avoid it, which, I mean, is good on its own sense, but people do the same when you have the heavy bolter, and having a plasma, having the heavy bolter and that, it just gives you another threat.
Yeah, like the plasma gun with the comms, you can have him move dash and take a shot, so we can really get angles on people, especially now with like the recon trooper can off-spec someone, get rid of obscuring, plus like all the mobility of the three APL on the plasma gun. Have you been like leaning into that stuff at all?
Oh yeah, the using the Kasserkin guy and giving the plus one to the plasma gun and the and your pistolier, like that's been very, very good. I've never, like I said, I'm almost statically give the pistolier the plus one APL, just because he almost deletes anything he runs up to, especially if you give him, you know, the heirloom pistol or the upgraded pistol. Then he's like, oh, I got a bolter pistol with a suppressed bolter pistol and a plasma pistol, you know.
Does that plasma pistol hit on threes in close range? Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's a good one.
He's by far your most reliable shooter in all the senses of the word. Very similar to the void master on the Lucidian Star Shredders. When you can shoot twice for one AP and both of your guns are threatening, it matters a lot. And the void masters are getting around with four attacks on twos, 4/4, and four attacks on threes, 3/4 balanced, and your Inquisition guy gets a whole plasma gun and a bolter with silence. So I'm sure he does a lot of work.
Yeah, he can. And you can give him like the armor that gives him an 4-up invulnerable save. He's a threat.
Are we hearing about a Doom guy?
Yeah, pretty much. You could. I was thinking about it. You can put a lot of points on him and make him very, very hard to kill. You can give him a plasma knife too.
Sounds like we're in range for niche tactics right now.
So niche tactics for Inquisition. Niche tactics. Throw some combos at us. Like, what are some of the cool like secret weapons, like secret combos, some of your favorite plays, like, you know, positioning for things, like what do you got for niche tactics for Inquisition?
I love the Novice Breachers. I feel like have the most combos that you can set up. And they also tend to be very flexible. I even with Jason, we were playing on that last game for that Adepticon practice game. Set up a bunker that was just absolutely nuts. It was like, I think I got over there turn three, and I had my Endurant in front of the door, but he was two circle away from a point, which is important for their defensive reroll. And then I had my leader behind him with his defensive aura. So if you shot at anybody within circle of my leader, you got minus one die. And then I had my plasma pistolier behind him. So my leader was being protected by it, so you couldn't shoot the leader. And then my plasma pistol was just kind of peeking over their shoulder and just shooting over too.
Yeah, and so shooting over the shield
guy. I was having a hell of a time. So if you were to try to shoot my pistolier, Jason was going to get minus two dice, and I'd get a defensive reroll.
Yep. So then it was like shoot straight for the shield guy. But then it's like he's got a 2-up with a reroll as well. And then it's like, he's even minus one die. Yeah. So I was like, I had like my Incursor Sergeant and the Incursor Marksman both shoot at your shield like two turns in a row. And then he like finally died. But it was just like, was not enough. Cause it's like, if you got two Space Marines shooting at one guy, double tapping for two turns in a row, and like that's what it takes to kill him, it's like, you're in a bad spot. That was a pretty gnarly castle.
We just ran in there and just killed a guy right after that.
Yeah,
that's what, like a really fun combo that to set up. It takes a little while, but if you can, especially on Into the Dark, if you can set it up, it just, you can create literally an impossible point to get through.
So that was like the three operatives. It was the plasma pistol behind the shield with the leader with the minus one attack dice aura.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like that can get you a lot of noodling around there. Did you come across any other like really exciting combos that you were particularly excited about?
Yeah, the cat, the use of, like, being, it's not really necessarily a combo, it's just more of a setup. I guess it's kind of a combo then. But yeah, you just like having your cat kind of dash up into protection right off the bat, and then you move him, and then you just kind of have him set up, and then you just basically out-activate your opponents because Inquisition has the highest activation. And then you usually just like your last activator is usually if you're going against like a horde team, your plasma cannon. And so then you like, hopefully, like you said, there's either an area that your opponents are going to be afraid to set up within 6 inches of that cat, or like when that happens every, I think almost every game I've had, I dash the cat up. People always ask what the cat does. I tell them, and they're like, okay. And then I place my token right by their guy's feet. Plasma cannon comes out, and then he ends up killing like three guys turn one.
The plasma cannon and the cat.
Yep. So, yeah, the cat just kind of sets up, and the surveyor actually places the token. And it's really, really good. Just because the cat can either give an area denial to your opponent where it's like, okay, if you move here, like, you're going to get shot. Like, and it, then you have enough heavy gun, or like, you can have your pistolier if you want, or like your plasma gun kind of behind some heavy and like, hopefully behind, like, not visible. And like I said, you can have your endurance again with the pistol, with your plasma cannon or your melta gun or your heavy bolter with being protected by your endurance so they can't shoot it even if he has an engage order. And then you just kind of set that up and it's like, okay, if you do anything, like, you're going to get shot and you're going to lose an operative. Or sometimes you just do it and yeah, it gets, even if you kill one guy, it catches a lot of people off guard and it literally can collapse the whole side very, very quickly for them trying to recover.
I think that is definitely the reason why most people are taking the Imperial Navy Reapers when it comes to support, just because the Endurant is such an insane model to give anyone, really.
Yeah, it is. It's nuts. I don't know. Like I said, the whole Inquisition team feels like just setting up. I don't know if there's like a whole lot of like combos that I can think of off the top of my head, other than like the pretty basic like Mystic buff onto like the heavy bolter. So then you just guarantee P1, which is always very nice.
Is there any other pieces that combo especially well with the Mystic?
I mean, the Grenadier is always a really good one too. Just like anything with blast, like the plasma cannon is good too. But I found it most useful with like makes a frag grenade a little more scary too. Especially if you put it on someone like the Penal Legionnaire, because he'll get full rerolls even. If there's an injured target, or not injured, but like any wounds minus the full health.
Yeah.
And you stick him on a frag with a Mystic buff. And he said, if he hits anybody with any wounds missing, like, then it's just like, it can just kill operatives, even like Space Marines sometimes. Otherwise it's like, okay, you do a bunch of damage with a frag and now you can just run in there and just clean up next turning point with Relentless. Cause he's a flamer pistol and a chainsword.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking about, I forget which one it is, but the dude that has the 5/7 lethal 5 single hit knife.
Yeah, he, the Death World vet, he is very cool, but I've actually not taken him a lot just because almost every time I've taken him, he's kind of not done a lot.
That's fair.
He would be kind of neat if you ran him alongside the skull, right?
Yeah, that's kind of, oh, that'd be, that's the only way I would really imagine him playing him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, having two dice
plus the Mystic buff. Yeah. I don't know, maybe that's too much.
I find his spear to be a little more useful just because a little more reliable. Because it's so, I think his spear still does like 5-6 damage,
but
still very nuts.
5/7 like on a 2-up and you upgrade it to a crit,
yeah,
you can one hit kill something. Which I guess is the most important thing.
We found the next silly Doom Guy team. So if anyone who's been playing Inquisition and has and wants to try it with us, I'm sure Jason is gonna get lead into a couple of these attempts.
Let's get cooking on
I'm definitely Doom down guy. For it. Like I said, but yeah, it's a little difficult. Like I said, he has his ability is like he just basically just a scratch a normal, but. Him being only a 7-wound operative himself, it's like there's not a lot of matches in which he actually does good. There's just better melee options, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's fair and valid.
I mean, he's like one of the best looking models on the team now. That's like the hardest part. He's such a cool looking dude.
Yeah. One of the other ones that jumped out to me for the Mystic is just like put him with the Kasserkin sniper. And then like it's like if you roll a single crit and you upgrade to another one, like you can auto kill like mostly everything in the game. And then like if you don't roll a crit, if you get like, you know, like three hits, upgrade one to a crit, that'll still probably kill most things.
Yeah. But another good kind of cool thing is if you have the novice Laz, or not the novice breachers Last Volley gun, because it has 6 attacks. If you have the Skull, you can actually bump it up to 7 attacks, which there's no gun in Kill Team with 7 attacks. That would be the only way you can do it.
That is pretty gnarly.
Yeah. So, and it has like full Relentless on top of it too, and P1, I believe.
Yeah. Does it have, I don't think, it doesn't have P1, does it?
No, it just has Relentless.
Oh, it has Relentless. And okay. Fusillade. The Caspian one has P1.
Yeah.
With 7 dice with Fusillade is like almost okay.
Yeah, because then you can finally split it and actually kill 2 things. And, you know, if you, I'm not sure if Quarry would transfer over mid-shot.
No, it does not. It's because it kind of all happened at the same time.
But it's Relentless on its own, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't need Quarry.
It's not Relentless. Getting too tricky with it. All right, so maybe the niche that we're playing around with is some Doomguy stuff on Inquisition, just because they have some of the biggest inventory. Do you have certain loadouts you really like doing? I know you've already mentioned that you like to give your pistolier the bolter, but are you taking like the standard melee loadout for the interrogator, or do you have other things that you found that you've liked on the Inquisition squad? Because they do have one of the largest armories in the game.
Yeah. I do like throwing the upgraded pistol on the Mystic as well, because he has a very sleeper profile on him that I think gets overlooked. He hits on 2s, and he also has a normal pistol, but with the upgrader, it turns into a bolter pistol. But his pistol also has indirect. So he can kind of become a random threat out of nowhere, or if you need him to clean something up.
Yeah, and doesn't he's also a good one to do that?
Yeah, he hits on 2s, yeah.
Yeah, hits on 2s, indirect, turn it into a bolter pistol. That is very strong.
So, but yeah, I tend to, I like to take a lot of the melee operatives from the Navis Breachers. When I was playing against the Harlequins, like I said, I didn't take any gunners. I took all melee operatives, the Cat and the Surveyor. And because I was like, AP is worthless in this fight. I just want any, like, invulnerable saves doesn't matter if I'm hitting you in the face with an axe. And it was a very good game. But yeah, I think I had half my team by the end of the game, and he had 3 operatives, all with like 3 or less wounds left.
So that did seems he use a Cargaric Death, or were you able to get around it by using the Mystic's, you know, free crit retain?
What was that?
Well, a big problem for most melee teams when they play against Void Dancers is all the Void Dancers generally have Cargaric's Jest up. So one of the ways to counterplay that is that you get more crits. And because you're playing Inquisition, you can actually rig the dice in your favor just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The Mystic did help a bunch. The Axe Jack was very, very useful. Like I said, I had my Axe Jack carried a lot of the weight. He was kind of the first one to go in. But then I used my Quest Keeper Mystic on my Quest Keeper, because he's just a nuts profile. And he pretty much just at that point, two taps any Void Dancer. If he gets the charge, he then has a 5-up Feel No Pain. He just has a 5-up statically.
Yeah, and then the Axe Jack is the one that's getting the other 5-up Feel No Pain. So
he already has a lethal 5-up as well.
Yeah, so melee operatives that are good with crits that can charge in and tank and, you know, maybe live through a combat with enough wounds to go and hit someone else or tank one whole attack and get one swing in, right?
Yep. And that actually ends up what happening is I would charge in, kill an operative. And I think my Quest Keeper ended up actually killing 2 Harlequins. I charged into him, killed a guy, and I had a guy that had one wound left. And he like hit me, and then I just smacked him again because Quest Keeper can hit on death, so he'll hit him for another 6 after that. And it's just like, oh man, that feels bad. Run a full health Harlequin into a guy with 1 wound to leave injured. But yeah, this and then like the same thing. I had the just using the Axe Jack to go in there, get charged, kill a guy. And then now he's like, he can also like body block with a 5-up save, with a 4-up save, with like a 5-up Feel No Pain. He can take a lot before he gives up that a point.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you do like your melee axe, the melee helpers, and you're using some of the more flexible operatives from the Imperial Navy Breachers, like the Cat.
which I think some players at the World Championships, they weren't running the cat, and we were surprised because it is such a powerful piece as far as giving you utility on a lot of boards. Like, sure, you don't get to do the GA2 thing that the actual breachers get to do, but still getting a no-go zone with your surveyor is definitely worth an operative, especially on a team as wide as the Inquisition, who have maybe one operative to go throw away doing that job.
Yeah. I find it more useful just for a number of reasons. I like it makes people not want to move up as far. It makes them want to play a little bit safer. If they do overextend, like I said, you can really punish them like hardcore. Sometimes people, or even worst case scenario, they just kill your cat and you're like, okay, you really had to go out of your way to do that now, and now you've wasted a whole shooting attack. They just either they deal with it or they don't. It's like literally a win-win situation, I feel like.
Yeah, that is kind of like one of the things I like to think about the cat as well, is like, even if it doesn't do anything, if it like makes people like behave funny and like spend activations to destroy it, when you know, it just like eats up time and you know, it's an activation game, so like eating up enough time to get people where you want them is very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it does technically count for as one APL towards objectives. Same with like the skull. So like, there's times when you can actually, if you get the opportunity, if you take central control, you can sometimes get them into the central position in safe spot if there's like nobody else there, and you just get central control because your cat's there.
Yeah, and yeah, then man. Like another thing I've seen with the skull is like people will just like put it out there and just like park next to someone to give the bonus, and then like if people don't have the action economy to deal with it, it just gets away with it. Or like if they do, it's like, I'm totally fine with you having to shoot, like, your last activation is a plasma gun, and then I move the skull out, and it's like, is that the only thing you're going to give me? And then it's just like, the plasma goes after the skull or something like that. I mean, just, the skull can get away with a lot of stuff just because you've got threats all over the place. It's kind of the point there.
Yeah, he's not a threat himself, he's just a body. And it's just like, that can also do things for you.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to kind of start doing well with the team? Because I know the team is not the easiest team to play. It's got a lot of moving pieces, not the best ballistic skill, a wide range of things you can take. You know, Jay was out here talking about taking infiltration and like tricking people for, you know, what tac ops he was going to do. So how long did it take for you as a player to kind of ramp up on Inquisition and start feeling like you were competent? And during that, what helped you feel confident? Like, what plays did you start doing that you were like, oh, this is working pretty regularly, you know?
I pretty much have been playing the team since they came out. Maybe not like all the time, but I started playing them when they came out. I got really lucky and was able to pick up an Ashes of Faith box from a local store from South Dakota, where I'm originally from, because no one else had really ordered it. And so I pre-ordered it through them. And then I will actually happen to pick up an Ashes of Faith box as well. And he wanted the Chaos Call. He didn't want any of the Inquisition. So I buy his half of the Inquisition too to make the full roster. And so I've had everything set up. I already had their bodies, like I said, and I had already picked up at Casterkin at that point too. And I kind of been playing him, and I don't think it was until November when I started playing Renegade, because I wasn't really planning on trying to win Renegade. I'm not that great of a player, and I wanted to play for fun. And I was like, hey, there's nothing good. Because we were going to play like eight games, I think, or seven or eight games that weekend. I was like, this will be really good to just grind games out to learn Inquisition. And by the time I started that on that Saturday, and then the end of that, the last couple games on Sunday, I felt like I had, you know, learned that team like tenfold.
Yeah, another reason to get out to your local tournaments and get some games in.
Yeah, and also you should definitely post pictures of your display board from Renegade, because that was a really incredible display.
Yeah, a little overboard, but my wife really likes to build display boards with me, so I let her go hard on two of them.
Yeah, it turned out great.
Yeah, just so you know, Travis, I took Inquisition as my team, and then I built the display board for each of my incinerary supports.
Little, very, very cool.
They were all like in their own little like native zone, and then there was like, yeah, so it was like five boards put together in one with all the different support options and all that. Yeah, it looked really cool. You had little LED lights in one of them at least.
Yep, the Arbiti precinct one that I did. Yeah,
Yeah,
that was the one I'm most proud of.
That's properly epic. So, you know, make sure to get pictures up on our Discord so that, you know, the listeners can see. Or maybe, you know, if you post some pictures of your miniatures that are that we can have our social media guy cut out, maybe we can just actually have our faces on your miniatures this for this upcoming week.
I would be down for that.
All right. How are things going in the Midwest? Because you guys are in the same play scene. You know, it's been a minute since we caught up a little bit. So how's it going? You guys thinking about putting your events up on the UTC?
Yeah. So do you want to take this, Lee, or do you want me to jump
no,
in?
No, I was going to say that I haven't actually really done much with Best Coast Pairings or UTC at all. The few games that tournaments that I've hosted, my Best Coast Pairings doesn't ever work for me. So Jason's been doing it all.
Yeah, and like the last one was extra buggy. It was like I couldn't get the website to work. I couldn't do anything. So we ended up just like everyone signed up and then it just like crashed and we did it manually. But yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to get some like something on the UTC soon. I think that would be a lot of fun. Like in general, the club is doing well. We're pretty like centralized again for any other Minnesota listeners that haven't already joined. We've been doing Tuesday nights at Game Center, which is, it's got like a big free parking lot and they've got like, you know, some snacks and they've got like, a big, enormous amount of space. So it's a cool spot. And like the Tuesday nights have been going generally pretty strong. I missed the last one, but it seems like we've had plenty of times where we've hit like at least like 12 to 14 people.
Nice.
Which is pretty
for
cool.
For a weekly game night, that's really good actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Renegade thing is coming up and that is landing on a pretty busy weekend for me. I'm hoping I can make it to at least like one of the days of Renegade. So you're actually working on some of the stuff with that, Lee. Do you remember what weekend that is so we can shout it out?
I'd have to double check. I'm horrible at remembering these dates.
I think it's like late May.
Yeah, I want to say it's like May, like the second. The last weekend in May.
23rd? I think that sounds right. We'll double check and make sure we...
It'll be in the show notes.
That's the wrong one. 25th is that weekend in May. We'll figure it out.
It'll be in the show notes. Don't worry, listeners. If you're in the Minnesota area or the Midwest and you want a tournament to go to, the Renegade opening is coming up. Soon we'll have a narrative tournament run by Lee. So if Lee's vibe sounds like your thing, you know, maybe it's a good time to check out the narrative.
Well, Will will be helping me too. It's going to be the co-op thing with me and Will.
Yeah.
And I'll probably be like involved in the playtesting and stuff. And maybe I'll make it out that day. I just got to like nail down my calendar for that, for all of May, really.
Yeah, I got a lot of really cool rules. It's a lot of custom missions. Me and Will are both very, very excited for this new one. We've been brainstorming.
Are you guys going to use Beta Decima in the narrative stuff at all?
A little bit. We're going to use Beta Decima, but we're not going to use the ocean board. We're going to just, it's going to be on an open board, which is actually one of the first missions we came up with is that we, escalating tensions. So it's basically like, the first map will be that have a list of Beta Decima terrain. But then after the first turning point, basically the base level becomes like, you just get incapacitated. And then on the third turning point, then the second level. So then basically forces everybody on top of, we're planning on having probably two furnace tops up there. And then so you have everybody that's alive still like up on these furnaces.
Oh man, I absolutely love that. This is the first time I've heard of that and I'm really excited about that.
It does sound cool. I think having like a nice visual meme like definitely helps sell the events. Because when players walk in and they see like, oh, look at this like double tiered thing. Like that's part of why Necro and Mordheim boards look so cool is because they've got so many more layers. And I think that's one thing that Beta Decima does well, even if the games aren't maybe the most competitive at the moment. But just like as you're walking around, seeing those three different levels of play is nice. It's just the rule set is maybe not robust enough or there just needs to be more room that's usable.
Yeah. The Beta Decima is super fun when you're playing with teams that are like pretty balanced for it, but it feels very, very bad if you're playing against a team that's like really strong on it.
Yeah, I think Ace hit it on the head where it's like, if it's two teams that aren't good at Beta Decima, it's fine. If it's two teams that are good at Beta Decima, it's also fine. It's when there's like the mismatch that it's like, ooh, I'm just going to stand here as the Void Dancers get out to all the points, and then I'm going to have to fight them on their terms. Or it's like, ooh, that commando started up and he's just nailing me and there's literally nothing I can do. Those moments are definitely not great.
Yeah, if you have like I know I'm kind of scared to play a horde team that has good shooting. Like, I feel like Vanguard could potentially be really good if they get allowed to set up. Just because you get enough bodies, it just doesn't matter where you are. You're just not going to be able to hide.
I don't have Chaos Cults, but I want to play Chaos Cults on Beta Decima. I don't know. Maybe
I just wish that Beta Decima had more playable space. I think like the only side of the maps that I think have felt playable are the side with the extra cutout in the middle, just so that you have more avenues to like move around. When you're playing on just a huge open board, it's just hard to make enough play space where it feels like you're actually playing the game and you're not just like, ah, there's a vantage overlooking the entire space where I must go.
It can feel bad for sure. It almost needs like more cover, but like at the same time, it's like it's already hard to shoot sometimes on that map. If you had cover, sometimes it's like, oh, there's just going to be no shooting at all.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the things that I'm struggling with as far as that terrain goes. Like, I feel like it needs more terrain, or some of the pieces just needed a little bit more cover. But it is what it is. I don't know if it'll become standardized just because it feels like a lot of the regions have such disparate opinions on it right now. So time will tell.
Yeah, I definitely need some different rulings. I was kind of hoping that the balanced data sheet would be out today so that we could discuss it. And hopefully there would be more rules on it. Some FAQs.
Don't worry, fellow listeners. You know, me and Jason will have a bonus episode the moment that drops. So we'll have hot takes abound. And maybe some other hot takes later in the month.
Is there any other final shoutouts that we want to do before we call it episode end?
For anyone in the East Coast area, you know, in June, FLG is running the Atlantic City Open. I might still be the TO there. I'm not 100% sure yet. I'm trying to figure out. So mark your calendars if you want to go to the Atlantic City Open. What about you, Lee?
I feel like I deserve to shout out Blaine because I was actually supposed to be playing a game with him on Saturday, but like I said, I wasn't feeling that great, so I kind of dodged. And then I met up with Will a little bit just because we were obviously local, or me and him. I was going to meet Blaine about an hour and a half away, 2 hours to play a game of Kill Team. But I want to give him a shout because he's a super nice guy. He came down for that Kill Team, and he just wants to help grow the Midwest Kill Team scene. And I just appreciate that.
Yeah, for listeners who don't know, Blaine is Six-Sided Legion. I met him at the first Chicago Open. He went to the World Championships last year as on the first of the Chaos Cult tickets. Real stand-up guy. And the Six-Sided Legion also do a little bit of content on YouTube. So, you know, if anyone wants to give their channel a listen or a look, make sure to take a look because they're definitely friends of the podcast. We've had Blaine on in the past, way, way back when we first started this.
Yep. Yeah, they also just started a Discord, so if he's listening, he should drop that.
Yeah, I mean, as far as any other thing that you're excited on in the future, you know, outside of like just Kill Team, I know in the pre-show notes, you've got other hobbies, you know, anything else that you're excited for?
Just getting my other Kill Teams done. Right now, I'm working on painting some Vet Guard up and some Phobos. That I've dropped a couple of photos of my new Phobos, but they're works in progress. There's a lot of time. Excited to get those done.
Phobos are definitely some of the cooler models, so it's no surprise it's taking a little bit longer. I know mine took a while, even though I hated them on release.
Yeah, the Vet Guard models though, those to me are gorgeous. Those I have been having a lot of fun painting those.
Oh yeah, they're the classic. They're classic at this point. Like, they were classic when they were Krieg Forge World models, and they remain classic in plastic.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot for listeners to get a hold of. You know, if anyone who's listening is really into narrative or has cool narrative stories or wants to talk a little bit about their their stories, come on our Discord and tell us. You know, we've got a growing community that continues to get larger and larger. I think the most recent conversation on our Niche Tactics was about Khorne Legionaries, so plenty of silly things going on there.
Yeah, we need to have more Phobos guys in there.
We talk about Phobos on the pod a lot. I'm sure we can generate a lot of Phobos chat in the Discord.
Yeah, we almost need to have like a Phobos versus Legionary tournament.
We'll just make a specific Discord channel that's just Phobos and Legionary.
That'd be actually fun to have like a narrative event, though. Just Phobos versus Legionary. Next big idea right there.
I mean, soon we're going to have a whole nother flavor of Space Marine. You know, you could have like the Intercession and the Legionary face off while the Phobos and the Night Lords face off and then kind of bounce them off each other. So,
yeah, that would be fun. I could get behind that.
It could be an all Astartes.
Opening that up would be a lot better.
An all Astartes Thunderdome.
If you're feeling really hipster, you can bring Grey Knights and Death Watch.
Death Watch would probably slap in an all Space Marine tournament. So.
That's true. And if you're really feeling hipster, bring heavy intercessors.
Yeah, poor Justine finally nerfed all the way. I think part of the internet discussion recently was that some GW rep for some event said that the heavy intercessor is actually at 4 attacks on Justine.
Oh, is it really?
That's a rumor. Ooh. I haven't confirmed. And, you know, until they actually got it for it, you know, just, you know, for the time being, better to play Justine in Japan than in America.
You got to get the other cards are better there.
All right, Lee, thanks for coming on and talking about all this cool stuff. I'm hoping that your narrative event goes well. And, you know, hopefully we'll have some pictures up in the New York Open about some cool Titan boards, some teasers along the way.
Yes, I'm very excited to see those. I appreciate you inviting me on.
And thank you, listeners, for listening until the end.